Welcome to our deep dive into the Book of Nehemiah. We've got some fascinating excerpts here from Dr. Tiberius Rada's lecture series, and we're going to unpack this amazing story of rebuilding Jerusalem's walls, all the teamwork and the opposition, and just the sheer determination.
It's a great story.
Involved in this whole thing.
It is. And we're going to be focusing on chapters 3 and 4.
Okay.
And you'll see Nehemiah wasn't just a leader, but somebody who faced challenges head on while relying on his faith. A man of action and deep prayer.
That's a powerful combination.
It is.
Now, Dr. Rada paints this really vivid picture of this period.
Yes.
Remember, this is the return from the third exile.
Right.
And he really emphasizes that Nehemiah was all about getting things done. But what's interesting is that he wasn't a solo act.
No, not at all.
Right.
Teamwork was absolutely essential to the success of this massive project.
Okay.
Chapter 3 is almost like a blueprint for effective collaboration. It wasn't just a handful of people bearing the burden.
Yeah.
Everybody contributed regardless of their background or skill set.
And it wasn't just a case of everyone doing a little bit either.
Right.
Dr. Rada points out that we see true commitment from the people.
Yes.
With around 20 groups mentioned, all working on different sections of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It really drives home the point that this was a united effort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to see how this collaborative spirit is reflected in the leadership.
Okay.
We see Eliashib, the high priest, setting a powerful example.
Okay.
He doesn't just issue orders from some distant office. He's right there on the ground working alongside everyone else.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
I mean, we could easily imagine a scenario where the high priest delegates the work and oversees things from afar.
Right.
But his active participation seems to send a very different message, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes about his humility and his understanding of shared responsibility. He's not above the work.
Right.
And that resonates deeply with the people.
Okay.
Dr. Rada even draws a parallel to the story of Charlemagne the king.
Okay.
And the bishop, who famously stated that the king is but a humble sinner.
Wow.
It's a reminder that true leadership often lies in serving alongside those you lead.
It makes you think about how that approach might translate to leadership today, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how much more effective could leaders be if they embrace that kind of humility and active participation?
It's a powerful concept to consider.
Yeah.
And this commitment to collaborative action is key.
Okay.
Because, let's face it, rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem was a monumental task.
Oh, yeah.
But the challenges didn't stop at the sheer scale of the project.
Right. It wasn't long before they encountered some serious opposition.
That's true.
And Sanballat and Tobiah,
yes,
all ultimate naysayers.
They're classic.
They were constantly mocking and ridiculing the whole endeavor, trying to undermine the workers' morale.
Yeah. And they weren't just throwing shade. They made some pretty direct threats.
Like what?
Even saying, if a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall.
Oh, wow.
I mean, talk about trying to demoralize a workforce.
It makes you wonder what their motivation was. I mean, why were they so invested in seeing this project fail?
Well, Dr. Rada suggests that it likely boils down to power dynamics.
Okay.
Sanballat was the governor of Samaria, and Tobiah was an Ammonite official.
Okay.
They probably saw a fortified Jerusalem as a direct threat to their own influence in the region.
So it was more than just personal dislike.
Right.
There were some real political stakes involved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it highlights a universal truth.
What's that?
Even when you're doing something good, something that benefits the community, you're bound to encounter resistance, especially if it disrupts the existing power structures.
And how does Nehemiah respond to this opposition?
Well,
he doesn't back down, that's for sure.
He absolutely does not.
Right.
And his response is incredibly insightful. Okay. On one hand, he turns to God in prayer, acknowledging his feelings of being despised and asking for strength and guidance.
Okay.
But he doesn't stop there.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting.
Yes.
Dr. Rada points out that Nehemiah takes a two-handed approach.
Right.
He doesn't just pray.
Mm-hmm.
He also takes practical steps to protect the workers and secure the project.
Yes.
He's not letting faith make him passive in the face of threats.
It's a fantastic example of balancing faith with action.
Yeah.
And his actions are pretty decisive.
Okay.
He stations guards, makes sure everyone working on a wall is armed,
and
basically tells them to be ready to defend themselves.
Wow.
Mm.
Dr. Rada describes it as them working with a brick in one hand and a sword in the other.
Right.
It's a very powerful image. really encapsulates the level of determination and resilience they had.
They understood that rebuilding the walls wasn't just about physical labor. It was a fight for their future, their security, and their identity as a people.
And that sense of purpose is reinforced by Nehemiah's words of encouragement to the people.
Yes.
He tells them to remember the Lord who is great and awesome and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes.
Wow.
It's like a rallying cry reminding them of the higher purpose driving their efforts.
Absolutely.
Right.
And those words have a resonance that extends far beyond the rebuilding of Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks to the human spirit's ability to overcome adversity when fueled by faith.
Okay.
A sense of purpose and a commitment to protecting what's precious.
And speaking of adversity, Dr. Rada points out that the opposition continues to escalate.
Yeah.
It's not just Sanballat and Tobiah anymore.
Right.
We see the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites joining forces against them. It's almost as if their progress is fueling the resistance.
It's a reminder that the closer we get to achieving our goals, the more intense the challenges often become.
Yeah.
And that's certainly true in Nehemiah's story.
Okay.
But he doesn't let the threats and taunts deter him. He keeps pressing forward, encouraging his people to work with one hand and defend with the other.
It's an incredible testament to his leadership.
It is.
He doesn't shy away from the reality of the situation, but he also doesn't let fear cripple their efforts.
Right.
He seems to have this unwavering belief in their ability to overcome these obstacles.
And it's not just blind optimism either.
Okay.
He acknowledges the fear and discouragement that his people are feeling.
Right.
He understands that they're human and that this is an incredibly daunting task.
Yeah.
But he also reminds them that they are not alone in this fight.
And this is where his faith really shines through, isn't it?
Yeah.
He reminds them that ultimately our God will fight for us.
Yes. And it speaks to the idea that even in the face of overwhelming odds, there is strength and resilience to be found in faith, in the belief that a higher power is working alongside you.
It makes you wonder how that kind of faith can be cultivated and harnessed, even in the face of modern day challenges.
It's a question worth exploring. And I think it's something we can delve into further as we continue to unpack this incredible story.
Absolutely. So much to discuss. But before we move on, I want to touch on something that Dr. Rada brings up that I think is particularly relevant to us today.
Okay.
He talks about the concept of imprecatory prayers,
right,
those asking for judgment on enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And he suggests that they might not be appropriate in the New Testament era because of Jesus's teachings about loving our enemies.
Mm.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a complex theological question.
Yeah.
And one that has been debated for centuries.
Okay.
We can certainly understand Nehemiah's raw emotions in the face of such intense opposition.
Uh-huh.
He's feeling threatened, betrayed, and deeply frustrated.
And, I mean, these weren't just internet trolls.
Right.
These were people actively trying to sabotage their efforts and potentially cause them harm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's this raw human emotion that we can relate to even today.
Mm.
But then you have Jesus who teaches us to love our enemies, to pray for those who persecute us.
Right.
It seems like a completely different approach.
So how do we make sense of that?
Right.
Are these imprecatory prayers just a relic of the Old Testament? Something we're supposed to move past?
Well, Dr. Rada suggests that it's not about dismissing them outright,
okay,
but rather understanding them in context.
Okay.
He argues that Jesus isn't necessarily condemning these prayers,
okay,
but rather offering a new, higher standard of love and forgiveness.
So it's about evolving our understanding of how to deal with conflict and opposition.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It's not easy, of course.
Right.
It requires a conscious effort to choose love over vengeance, forgiveness over retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, that's the path that Jesus calls us to follow.
It makes you think about how we handle conflict in our own lives, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We react with anger and a desire for revenge, or do we try to find a path towards understanding and reconciliation?
Those are powerful questions.
Yeah.
And I think Nehemiah's story provides some valuable insights.
Okay.
Remember, he didn't just pray for his enemies to be punished.
Hmm.
He also took practical steps to protect his people and the work they were doing.
It was that two-handed approach we discussed earlier.
Yes.
Prayer and the action.
Right. So it's not about being passive or turning a blind eye to injustice.
Right.
It's about finding a balance between standing firm in your convictions while also seeking a path toward peace.
Okay, so we've talked about teamwork leadership and those challenging imprecatory prayers.
Mm-hmm.
What other key takeaways can we glean from Nehemiah's story that might be relevant to us today?
Well, one thing that really stands out to me is the importance of both vision and strategy.
Okay.
Nehemiah had a clear vision for the future of Jerusalem, and he was able to inspire others to share that vision.
It's not enough to just want something to happen, is it?
Right.
You need a plan, a way to make it a reality.
Exactly. Oh. And Nehemiah was a master strategist. He anticipated challenges, devised plans to overcome them, and was able to adapt as needed when new obstacles arose.
He didn't just wait for things to happen. Right. He made things happen.
Exactly.
He saw the big picture, but he also understood the importance of details.
Right. He was organized, methodical, and incredibly resilient.
Okay.
And that's a powerful lesson for us today.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're pursuing a personal goal, leading a team, or trying to make a difference in the world.
Right.
Having a clear vision and a solid strategy is essential.
It's about being intentional, taking calculated risks, and being prepared to adjust course when necessary.
Yes.
And of course, we can't forget the importance of perseverance.
Absolutely.
Nehemiah faced immense opposition and setbacks, but he never gave up.
Exactly.
He kept pushing forward even when things looked bleak.
Right.
And ultimately, that determination paid off.
It did.
It's a reminder that even in the face of adversity, we have the capacity to overcome obstacles and achieve remarkable things. His story is a testament to the power of the human spirit, isn't it?
It is.
To our ability to rise to the occasion and achieve what seems impossible when we're driven by purpose and a belief in something greater than ourselves.
Absolutely.
And speaking of inspiration, Dr. Rada doesn't explicitly mention this, but as I was reading through the excerpts you sent, I was struck by something else.
Okay.
He mentions women working alongside men actively contributing to the rebuilding efforts.
Oh, that's a great observation.
Yeah.
It often gets overlooked.
Right.
But it's a significant detail.
It challenges the traditional narrative, doesn't it?
It does.
This wasn't just a man's job.
Right.
It was a collective effort with everyone contributing their skills and talents.
And it speaks to the power of inclusivity.
Hmm.
When we recognize and value the contributions of everyone, regardless of gender or background,
right,
we create a stronger, more resilient community.
And that's a message that resonates deeply even today, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that we can achieve so much more when we work together, embrace diversity, and empower everyone to contribute their unique gifts and perspectives.
Awesome.
Hmm.
Well, let's move on to the gates now.
Yes. Let's unlock that symbolism.
Okay. So we've talked about the teamwork and the opposition and even touched on those imprecatory prayers.
Right.
But you mentioned the gates of Jerusalem having a deeper meaning.
Yes.
I'm ready to unlock that symbolism.
Okay, good. Because this is where things get really fascinating.
Okay.
Dr. Rada emphasizes that these gates weren't just about letting people in and out. They held profound symbolic significance for the people of Jerusalem.
Okay.
It's almost like they were reading their city's story through these entry points.
And not all gates were created equal, right?
Exactly.
Some seem way more symbolic than just a practical passage.
Take the Sheep Gate, for example.
Okay.
We already mentioned it was probably located near the temple.
All right.
But think about that for a moment.
Okay.
It's not just a place to bring livestock. It becomes a representation of worship and sacrifice.
Cool.
It's like the entrance to their spiritual lives as much as to the city itself.
And the fact that they chose to rebuild that gate first.
Right.
It really speaks volumes about their priorities.
It does.
They were rebuilding their city, yes. But also their connection to God.
Yes.
It was a powerful statement.
It certainly was.
Yeah.
And then we have the Fish Gate.
Okay.
Which Dr. Rada suggests was likely situated near a bustling marketplace.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine the sights and smells?
Yeah.
The energy of daily commerce?
I can almost smell it now.
It represented the vitality of the city, the livelihood of the people.
It's interesting, you know, we think of ancient cities as all about temples and grand structures.
Right.
But they had everyday life, too.
They did.
Buying, selling, haggling over fish, just like we do today. That connection to the past is kind of cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It reminds us that these were real people with real lives.
Yeah.
Not just figures in a historical narrative.
Right.
And then there's the Dung Gate.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not the most glamorous.
Right.
But definitely essential. Every city needs a way to deal with waste.
Yeah, you can't ignore sanitation no matter how spiritual you're trying to be.
That's right.
But I'm guessing there's a deep meaning here too, right?
You bet.
Okay.
Dr. Rada proposes that the Dung Gate could symbolize the purging of impurities.
Okay.
The removal of what's harmful or unwanted from the city.
Interesting.
It's a powerful metaphor for spiritual cleansing, getting rid of the things that hold us back.
Wow. Okay. I never would have thought of that.
Mm.
So each gate tells a story, adds another layer of meaning to this whole rebuilding process. It's like they're not just reconstructing walls. They're reclaiming their identity as a people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They are literally and figuratively rebuilding their lives brick by brick, gate by gate.
And that's where those imprecatory prayers that we discussed earlier come back into play.
Right.
You asked about their relevance in the New Testament era, especially in light of Jesus' teachings on loving our enemies.
Right.
Right. It seemed like a contradiction.
Hmm.
How do you reconcile those prayers with the idea of forgiveness and compassion?
It's a tension that many theologians have grappled with.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, you have Nehemiah, who's facing very real threats.
Right.
And is pouring out his heart to God, asking for protection and even judgment on his enemies.
I mean, these weren't just internet trolls. Right. These were people actively trying to sabotage their efforts.
Yeah.
And potentially cause them harm.
Exactly.
Right.
So there's this raw human emotion that we can relate to even today.
Uh-huh.
But then you have Jesus, who teaches us to love our enemies, to pray for those who persecute us.
Right.
It seems like a completely different approach.
So how do we make sense of that?
Yeah.
Are these imprecatory prayers just a relic of the Old Testament, something we're supposed to move past?
Well, Dr. Rada suggests that it's not about dismissing them outright.
Okay.
But rather understanding them in context. He argues that Jesus isn't necessarily condemning these prayers, but rather offering a new, higher standard of love and forgiveness.
So it's about evolving our understanding of how to deal with conflict and opposition?
Precisely.
Yeah.
It's not easy, of course.
Right.
It requires a conscious effort to choose love over vengeance, forgiveness over retaliation.
Mm.
But ultimately, that's the path that Jesus calls us to follow.
It makes you think about how we handle conflict in our own lives, doesn't it?
It does.
Do we react with anger and a desire for revenge?
Mm.
Or do we try to find a path towards understanding and reconciliation?
Those are powerful questions.
Yeah.
And I think Nehemiah's story provide some valuable insights.
Okay.
Remember, he didn't just pray for his enemies to be punished.
Yeah.
He also took practical steps to protect his people and the work they were doing.
It was that two-handed approach we discussed earlier, prayer and action.
Right. So it's not about being passive or turning a blind eye to injustice.
Right.
It's about finding a balance between standing firm in your convictions while also seeking a path toward peace.
Okay. So we've talked about teamwork leadership, the symbolism of the gates, and those challenging imprecatory prayers.
Mm-hmm.
What other key takeaways can we glean from Nehemiah's story that might be relevant to us today?
Well, one thing that really stands out to me is the importance of both vision and strategy.
Okay.
Nehemiah had a clear vision for the future of Jerusalem.
Mm.
And he was able to inspire others to share that vision.
It's not enough to just want something to happen, is it?
Right.
You need a plan, a way to make it a reality.
Exactly.
Right.
And Nehemiah was a master strategist.
Okay.
He anticipated challenges, devised plans to overcome them,
mm-hmm.
and was able to adapt as needed when new obstacles arose.
He didn't just wait for things to happen.
Right.
He made things happen.
Exactly.
He saw the big picture, but he also understood the importance of details.
Right.
Yeah.
He was organized, methodical, and incredibly resilient.
Okay.
And that's a powerful lesson for us today.
Whether
we're pursuing a personal goal, leading a team, or trying to make a difference in the world,
right.
having a clear vision and a solid strategy is essential.
It's about being intentional, taking calculated risks, and being prepared to adjust course when necessary.
Yes.
And of course, we can't forget the importance of perseverance.
Absolutely.
Nehemiah faced immense opposition and setbacks, but he never gave up.
Exactly.
He kept pushing forward even when things looked bleak.
Right.
And ultimately, that determination paid off.
It did.
It's a reminder that even in the face of adversity, we have the capacity to overcome obstacles and achieve remarkable things.
Right.
His story is a testament to the power of the human spirit, isn't it?
It is.
To our ability to rise to the occasion and achieve what seems impossible when we're driven by purpose and a belief in something greater than ourselves.
Absolutely.
And speaking of inspiration, Dr. Rada doesn't explicitly mention this, but as I was reading through the excerpts he set, I was struck by something else. He mentions women working alongside men actively contributing to the rebuilding efforts.
Oh, that's a great observation.
Yeah.
It often gets overlooked.
Right.
but it's a significant detail.
It challenges the traditional narrative, doesn't it?
It does.
This wasn't just a man's job.
Right.
It was a collective effort with everyone contributing their skills and talents.
And it speaks to the power of inclusivity.
Mm.
When we recognize and value the contributions of everyone, regardless of gender or background,
right,
we create a stronger, more resilient community.
And that's a message that resonates deeply even today, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that we can achieve so much more when we work together, embrace diversity, and empower everyone to contribute their unique gifts and perspectives.
You know, it's amazing how this story, even though it took place centuries ago, still feels so relevant today.
I agree.
Those themes of collaboration and resilience and faith, they resonate on such a deep level.
Yeah, they really do.
Right.
It makes you wonder how we can apply those same principles to our own lives today, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we might not be rebuilding physical walls.
Right.
But we all face challenges.
We do.
That require that same kind of grit and determination.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I think Nehemiah's story kind of provides a roadmap.
It does.
For how to navigate those challenges.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
I think so. And one of the things that really stands out to me is his focus on empowering others.
Okay.
He didn't try to do everything himself.
Yeah.
He recognized the importance of delegation and giving people ownership over their specific tasks.
Right back in part one,
yeah,
we talked about how he divided the work among those different groups.
Mm-hmm.
Each responsible for a section of the wall.
Yes.
It was a brilliant strategy for ensuring that everyone felt involved and invested in the project's success.
Exactly. And it wasn't just about dividing the labor.
Right.
It was about recognizing and utilizing people's unique skills and talents.
Mm-hmm.
We see examples of this throughout chapter 3.
Okay.
Goldsmiths working on the temple gate.
Wow.
Perfumers repairing their own section of the wall.
Okay.
Even a ruler's daughter taking on a prominent role.
It's like he was creating this tapestry, weaving together the contributions of people from all walks of life.
A beautiful analogy.
Yeah.
And it speaks to the idea that we're all interconnected, that we each have something valuable to offer.
And that when we come together, pool our resources and talents,
yes,
we can achieve extraordinary things.
Precisely. And that brings us back to another key takeaway from Nehemiah's story.
Okay.
The importance of perseverance.
Right.
Because, let's face it, rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem was no walk in the park.
Oh, yeah. Understatement of the year. Yeah. I mean, they faced constant opposition, sabotage attempts, even threats of violence.
Yes.
It would have been so easy to just give up, throw their hands in the air and say, this is impossible.
Absolutely. And we see glimpses of that discouragement in the text. The workers complain about the overwhelming amount of rubble. The exhaustion, the seemingly endless opposition.
But Nehemiah doesn't try to sugarcoat things or pretend it's easy.
He acknowledges their struggles.
Right.
Validates their feelings. But then he reminds them of their why.
Oh, okay.
He reminds them that they're fighting for their families, their homes, their future.
And it's that sense of purpose that fuels their perseverance.
Like
they know that what they are doing matters.
Yeah.
And that gives them the strength to keep going, even when it's hard.
That's so powerful.
Yeah. It's a powerful lesson for us, isn't it?
It is.
We all face setbacks and challenges in life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that sense of purpose, that belief in something bigger than ourselves that helps us stay the course.
Absolutely. And that sense of purpose often comes from a deep connection to something greater than ourselves.
Okay.
For Nehemiah, it was his faith in God. Time and again, we see him turning to prayer for guidance, strength, and reassurance.
And it's not just about asking for help, is it? Mm-hmm. It's about acknowledging that we are not in control.
Right.
That we need to rely on something bigger than ourselves to guide us through difficult times.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
It's about surrendering our ego and recognizing that we don't have all the answers.
And trusting that even when things seem chaotic or uncertain, there is a plan unfolding a purpose to our struggles.
Exactly. Awesome. And that can be incredibly comforting and empowering.
Yeah.
It allows us to let go of the need to control everything and to lean into the journey, trusting that we will be guided and supported along the way.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the book of Nehemiah, what's the one takeaway you'd like to leave our listener with? What's the most valuable lesson we can glean from this ancient story and apply to our modern lives?
I think it's this. We are all capable of extraordinary things.
Okay.
We have within us the strength, the resilience, and the creativity to overcome obstacles and achieve what seems impossible.
it's about tapping into that inner strength.
Yes.
That unwavering belief in ourselves and our ability to make a difference.
Right. And it's about remembering that we're not alone in this journey.
Yeah.
We have each other. We have our faith. And we have the wisdom of those who have come before us to guide and inspire us.
So well said. Nehemiah's story is a timeless reminder that even in the face of adversity with a little faith, a lot of hard work, and perhaps a metaphorical sword in one hand, we can rebuild what's broken, restore what's lost, and create a brighter future for ourselves and those around us. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey of discovery. Until next time, keep diving deep.